Today's material, we're looking still at pitfalls for elders and the rest of us. We've talked about communication issues, hypocrisy, motivation. Now we're down to points 4 through 8. These, of course, are going to be failing to delegate, anxiety or worry, being unwilling to forge ahead with the plan, even though it may look bad, trying to solve spiritual problems with secular tools and ideas, and failing to be impartial. Let's think about the first one, failing to delegate. Where do we see that as we look at our world? Failing to delegate.
It's going to get it done as well as I am, so I'm just going to do it all.
All right. Is there some truth in that?
There are people that do that, yeah.
Yes, and sometimes that's true. I mean, you can do something, especially when it comes to kids, and you can do it a lot faster and maybe a lot better than the child can. But if you do that for your kids as they're growing up, what kind of child do you have when he or she reaches 18 or 20 years of age? Pretty much helpless. Because they've not been trained. And as we've talked about in at least one class, there needs to be that bridge. You are at this point, you don't know anything, you don't know very much, you're not skilled. You one day need to be here, and if we don't help build that bridge, it's not going to work out very well. So parents need to be able to delegate. I think, Sherman, you mentioned the workplace.
Yeah, I thought you said where.
Yeah, and that would be another good answer. We have that same philosophy there. People think, well, okay, you're here. If you're promoting within the company, you've been here for 15 years, and now we're going to take you off the line, and we're going to make you a manager, supervisor, foreman, whatever it might be. Well, that may not work out real well. The guy may know all the stuff that needs to be done, but looking at it from the standpoint of having additional authority, maybe the white-collar side of things, I mean, that's just nothing that he's ever been trained about. But if somebody had taken him or her under the wing and said, this is the other side of it, and begins to see some of those things. We have on-the-job training. That's been around for a long time as far as that concept. And in the church, that there needs to be that as well. So elders, if they're going to help prepare that generation, ideally they're going to do some of that. How much you do that as far as not just delegating, but trying to prepare that next generation? If you're an elder, and I've done some of this, not as an elder, but as a preacher, you're going to go and make a hospital visit. You think you might grab somebody and say, I'm going to the hospital to make a visit. I'd like you to come with me.
I know you're pretty good at that.
So, you're trying to train the next generation. What about in a Bible class? We've done that here. Taking some of our older teens, maybe a young lady, and saying, okay, you've gotten to the point now where we think that we could put you in with this teacher and have you learn some things, those kinds of things. So you're, in some respects, delegating, trying to train the next generation to make sure that they're going to be ready to serve God to the fullest of their abilities.
Where we worshiped before, we had a strong youth group, and every once in a while they would let the young men actually do the entire service.
Yeah, that would be another way. You're delegating, still you're the overseer, you're the bishop or the shepherd in that set of circumstances, but you are still delegating. How else might you delegate as an elder?
Younger boys under your wing to show how and I don't know how exactly, but that was done with Jeff when he was 12, 13 years old. And a man came to me and asked me if it would be all right if they took him under his wing. To he said, I'd like to see him grow up to be a deacon someday. And I said, sure, no problem. And he really helped Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're spending some time there, trying to involve them in some things, giving them some responsibilities. We've done that in some other areas here. And it's a small thing from time to time. What about somebody that's sick? Not going to be up, they've broken their leg and they're not going to get out of the house for the next 6 weeks. You think you might be able to grab a young person and say, this individual would like the bulletin. Here's some stamps and here's the way to mail the bulletin. And you make sure that every Friday, Saturday, Monday, whatever day of the week works out, that you mail this bulletin to that person. Well, that's a small thing. But remember Jesus' teaching? If you're not faithful with a little, you're not going to be faithful with a lot. So it may be just that small act of mailing out that bulletin, or it may be we want you to call this particular person, set this thing up, make these arrangements, and that's good, and that shows good management on the part of these men.
Building on what Monty had to say, if you have elders, good if you also have the votes for an elder to speak at those, or even from time to time speak in a small child or young teenage boy or girl's class as a Bible school teacher.
Yep. And there would be...
On the front.
Sure. Delegation on the front side of that. You know, we'd like you to work with the youth. We're still going to be involved with that. But I think you'd find some congregations where if an elder showed up to give a devotional, man, you know, what's going on here? You know, you brought in the big guns. But going back to that first lesson that we talked about, that first handout sheet, you've got the sheep and the shepherd, remember? And you've got that relationship there. But a lot of times young people just don't see it. But if the elders are delegating, trying to work within that framework, you've got that cohesive family unit that's described in the Bible.
Apart from, you know, being an example to the youth and that kind of thing, would be, I'm thinking even physical things about even the building or budgeting or what have you. Yes, it needs to go through the eldership, but, you know, your deacons can do that. People in the pew can do that. I feel like the elders need to be relieved of the physical type things like that so they can, you know, help on the spiritual, maybe.
Well, you find that principle in the book of Acts. Remember, the apostle said this is a good work as far as the widows, the Grecians and the Hebrews. But we've got some other activities that we can be involved with rather than waiting on the tables. And we're not opposed to that. You know, we're not opposed to mowing the lawn or washing the windows or doing all the other things. But we can't do it all. So there has to be some delegation here.
If it gets in the way of an elder doing what he's really supposed to do, then it becomes a problem.
Yes.
Not being able.
And it does. Anything else as far as delegation that we've talked about thus far that you want to build on? Okay. Let's think about one of the items that has already been discussed a little bit. The last two, leaders must learn to delegate some things. If they don't, common problems that result from that, trying to do it all. Dolores touched on that. What else can we say if they try to do it all? All right. Eventually, they're probably going to get burned out. We see people get burned out. If you're in the workplace and you've got 10 people and only two are really pulling their load, how do you feel about that job? Every day is drudgery going to the job, isn't it? You know, usually people are not overstaffed in today's environment. So, again, they need some help there. What else? Failing to delegate, trying to do it all. Do you think people can start to make some mistakes if they get overburdened? You start putting on somebody all kinds of responsibilities, and after a time, you know, I've only got so many hours in the day. There are only so many things I can do. And when you start having to move from a pace that you're comfortable with to you're moving twice as fast, three times as fast, four times as fast, or you're at least spending less time on things, it's very easy to start making some mistakes. And in the spiritual, in any realm, it's not good, but especially in the spiritual realm.
And in the Bible, you've got examples of Eli and Samuel, who both had two bad sons. I think it's easy for someone in a religious setting trying to do everything, their family life gets neglected, their spouse gets neglected.
That has happened with not only elders, because they're out, you know, trying to do this, that, and the other thing, especially if you've got a larger congregation, even if you've got 8, 10, 12 elders. And with preachers, too. You know, they can get involved with so many things that, you know, the wife, the kids... And there have been a lot of families, elders' families, preacher families, that have lost wives, ended up in divorce, lost their kids. Kids get bitter against the church because there was just not enough time spent there. So it is a balancing act that sometimes it's very easy, you know, to not delegate and you get pushed off that stuff and various things begin to suffer, including family
sometimes
time.
Sometimes when you've got two, three, four, five elders, you might have one that just really wants to get in and do everything.
Yes.
And it creates a problem. The others don't know what's going on.
Yes. You're back to communication.
That's right.
But communication and delegation, you know, all these things kind of intertwine. And nobody gets it right all the time, but that's why we're discussing some of these things, because they are fundamentals when you deal with the eldership. Okay, let's look at the next item. Anxiety. Have three passages here. Let's get our helpers lined up. 2 Corinthians 11:28. Who wants to take care of it? Sherman. After that, we'll look at James 1, 2 to 4. True for all people, especially elders. James 1, 2 to 4. Brian, or was Julie? I don't. Right. One of you. Okay. And then 1 Peter 5, 7. Who wants to take? Okay. Catherine's going to take care of that. Let's start with 2 Corinthians 11:28.
Besides the other things, what comes upon me daily? My deep concern for all the churches.
Okay. What do people have? I'll use the word anxiety because that's what you'll find in some translations here. What provides people some anxiety in life? Let's think about anxiety. All right, people, you know, we'd like to have a crystal ball sometimes. We don't. and maybe there are some, in our minds, dark clouds hanging over us or hanging over the job, whatever it might be. So the fear of the unknown, or lack of knowledge, we might say. It may not necessarily be fear. So anxiety comes from that. Sherman?
I was going to say what Jeff said.
Okay.
But I can add things that maybe you aren't in control of.
That's also going to be true. What else? Anxiety. Doug?
I think people have a lot of anxiety when they don't know what to do with their jobs.
Okay.
Kind of like, oh, if I'm in a situation where I know what my job is, but there's other things that need to be done, it weighs on them and they get anxious about it. Like, why isn't this getting done? If they do it, they don't know if they're going to be acting. Others may act like, well, this guy thinks he's got more power than we do, and drama starts happening.
When you take those two answers, I think that we can provide two general directions. We have anxiety based on what we see or we think we see. We have anxiety based on what we can't see. Now, you can put a lot of things in there, job, health, and just, you know, family, a lot of different items, but that's, I think, the two general areas where you're going to find anxiety from. If we look at anxiety from that standpoint, can't we relate that to the church? There's some things that you can see congregationally that you may not know exactly how they're going to go, but you have some anxiety based on some history, based on some warning signs, those kinds of things. And is it also not true that you find some anxiety based on some things that Jeff said? We don't have the crystal ball, so we don't know. So you have both of those issues going on. Now, as an apostle, Paul said, I've got anxiety over all the churches. Well, we may have, you know, our typically, I think, primarily, we're going to be involved with one congregation. But there can be times where we have some anxiety over other congregations, don't we? When might you have anxiety over another congregation? Maybe halfway across the country.
They're going through a crisis.
All right, and maybe we've got family there. Maybe we worship there. Maybe we've got a son or daughter, you know, that's serving there in some capacity. So we've got that. Or it may be that we've got connections to a congregation overseas, for example, in a place like Ukraine. And we've got some loved ones there, and there's war and turmoil. So we've got anxiety over that.
If you've got problems in the church with strife or backbiting, wondering if people are talking about you, that type of thing, that causes a lot of problems.
Yeah, it does. There's anxiety there. Maybe not over the congregation. Maybe it's just a couple of members, or maybe it's a family. Or you've got anxiety sometimes because of health issues. A person or a family is going through some difficult times. There's a son or daughter that is going through a difficult period. Maybe it's a marriage problem. Maybe it's problems with the kids. So when we think about anxiety, we can see that as individuals. But let's remember who the elders are. What are they supposed to do in that local congregation? They're supposed to be the shepherds. They're responsible for your spiritual condition. So just your own family can give you some anxiety sometimes, can it? Imagine being an elder and you're responsible, and if you've got, you know, three or four elders, it's shared responsibility, obviously, but still, you have a responsibility in trying to help those 70 people through life and get them to heaven. That is a heavy responsibility. I mean, it's serious stuff. And that goes back to what we said before. There are people who look at the elders and they think, well, you know, they figure out how much money we're going to spend and whether or not we're going to have a ladies' day and this and that, and you know, it's pretty easy. It's not. If you take the job seriously, it is a serious load. And it can create some anxiety.
There in California, when we have an earthquake, or like down in Louisiana with Katrina and things, you know that there's churches there.
Yes.
And you know that you would like to be able to help, whether it's congregational helping them, or whether it's individuals trying to help them. So you get anxious about them anxieties. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, all the way around the world over there, there's still Christians there.
Exactly. And, you know, they are part of that congregation, that, or the church, we'll use that word, that Christ built. So again, there's concern there. And Paul, you know, even without the modern communication that we have, he was still getting some reports. So this is one of the things that elders struggle with. James 1, 2 to 4.
My brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into diversification, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing.
Okay, do you think elders are free from temptation? No. Their families are not free from that, so they've got, just like every other Christian, the individual situation going on that they have to deal with. But then, going back to what we were saying a few minutes ago, what else do they have? You've got this guy over here, and this family over here, and this wife, and this set of kids. They're going through temptations, and they come to the elders. And this is an interesting characteristic about people. Sometimes we're mindful of this, and I think even if we have seen this for 50 or 60 years, we're still not mindful of it. It's like a person who goes to the department store and says, I've got a problem. This part that you showed me didn't work, you know, the shirt has a seam loose, whatever it might be. At that moment, as you're interacting with that individual, generally I think in your mind what's going through it as far as this is how important to me. Well, if you're coming back and complaining, it's pretty important, isn't it? And as I'm talking to you, what should be the only thing in your mind? My problem. But might that be the case, or might something else be going on in the guy's head? You know, he understands you're there and he understands you're happy, but what else might be taking place in his life? He's just had the sewer line break. He's got water filling up in the bathroom. Or his wife just sent him a text and said, I'm getting divorced. You know, when we think about dealing with people, sometimes we can, I'm just going to use the word selfish or self-focused. We're so self-focused on what our need is, what our complaint is, that we forget that that other person may have gotten, your son just died. I don't think I use this. If I did, I'll use it again. But I use this, and I think, in a different context. But there was a story related not too long ago that this family goes to the hospital, and the doctor that they need is delayed. I mean, he's coming in, you know, he gets called in, he shows up about 70 minutes after he got the call. And the dad is just furious. My son came in, he needs your help, you're the doc, you should be right here. And, you know, you were in town and you waited over 70 minutes to come and do the surgery, and I am really upset with you. How can you call yourself a doctor? And dad really didn't do it. And the surgeon just said, hey, does this sound familiar to anybody? Okay. I thought it was a different context, but wanted to double check. So anyway, the doc says, you know, your son is my priority. I've got to go and deal with him, and I'll talk to you after the procedure. So he was as kind as he could be, but he was also firm. So he goes in, does the procedure, comes out and says, I'm sorry, I've got to go, but your son is fine. So everything is going to work out. There's some other people that can, you know, take care of things from here. And the dad was still fuming. I mean, now, not only on the way in, but the way out. This guy, how could he be so careless and rude? And he started to rant, and the nurse came along and said, hey, do you know that that guy was in the process of burying his son? We called him away from the cemetery. Now, I understand that the fellow's son needed attention, but here was the doc who was willing to come away from that and set everything aside. So as we're dealing with people sometimes, and let's take the point and apply it now to the elder. You know, you go and you've got this complaint. You know, I don't know. You can just pick out whatever you want. Somebody put the wrong color flowers up there. You know, you don't like pink, and somebody put pink. And I mean, you just come and go off. Well, to you that may be a big deal, but what about that elder? You know, he's thinking that he just got the diagnosis that's going to be announced a little later that morning that his daughter's got cancer. So as we deal with people, remember that the issue that you have may be very small compared to the issue that that elder has. And taking that one step further, if you're the elder in that congregation and you're dealing with 70 people or 500 people, do you think at any moment's notice there are going to be some people who are not real happy with something? That's just the way life is. So as you have those issues, bear in mind that you're talking to somebody, and this isn't just church-related, work-related or friend-related. The person that's listening to you may be in a very, very different set of circumstances. So that's, I think, good when we think about that and temptation. Follow-up thought on that before we deal with 1 Peter 5:7.
Sometimes we fear about taking our work issues home with us, but you can also take your home issues to work.
Yes.
And
yes, it does. Absolutely. 1 Peter 5:7.
Casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you.
Okay. This is one of those verses, it's very easy to say, very easy to teach on, whether that's a Bible class or a sermon, but elders are tempted, James 1, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul, the anxiety for the churches, and God's solution is you take those anxieties, you take those concerns, and what do you do with them? Put them on him. Well, if we struggle with that from time to time as Christians, do you think elders also struggle with that from time to time? They've not only got their issues, you've got Again, 100 people or 200 people coming to you with all their problems as well. And sometimes, Ray mentioned last week, Moses. Remember, Jethro has a conversation with him. This is too much for you. You need some helpers. So early in the Bible, you have that same kind of thing. Do you think, though, that elders can struggle with that? Remember what we just talked about? Where do we begin this lesson? What point? Elders can fail to delegate. Can you take that point and relate it to what we just said? Who do they refuse sometimes, or who do they struggle with when it comes to passing on those anxieties? God, I don't want to delegate it to you, and they may not say it, but in practical terms it comes out this way. I don't want to delegate it to you because who can handle it best? I can't. Me. You think people reason in that way? Absolutely. And I think we would find if we could look inwardly, folks probably do that a lot more often than they realize or maybe want to acknowledge. And elders can fall into that same trap. So that's why, as we think about the title of this lesson, Pitfalls for Elders and the Rest of Us. And the greater that anxiety becomes in a person's life, not in every case, but where does it get shifted as far as the pressure? People decide, I'm just going to take it on, you know, more and more and more. Less and less is directed to God, and that has some very unfortunate consequences at times, some of which have been suicide. So, you know, God has given this plan. He's laid it out very well, and if people refuse to follow it, it can come with some pretty unpleasant consequences if we're not doing what's right.
Being an elder's wife is very frustrating, and also the anxiety can be tremendous. I have had many a night when he's at a meeting or he's going to talk to somebody. I am doing good if I get one or two evenings alone with him when he was out there in San Diego. It's overwhelming. I mean, he's either sitting in his office on the computer, or he's over talking to other elders, trying to figure out this problem. We don't get to see each other. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of frustration and hard work for the wife also.
Well, I may not be a step ahead of you, but at least I'm on the same page. The elder's wife. So we're going to talk about that too. Maybe just not quite yet. So you hold all those thoughts, and we'll pick up with them a little later.
The apostles had problems with the Grecian widows.
Sure.
They had to bring somebody else in to take
them. All the women, huh? All the women, huh? But no. But they did have that. And you have the people coming. And it's about food. So, I mean, it's not we're concerned about the flowers. I mean, this is a big deal. This is where they're going to get their nourishment from. The apostles recognized that. They took action. But still, that was... I don't like the word distraction in this context, but I don't use that word in a bad way because this was important. But it was one more thing that was calling their attention away from this when they need to be focused over here, and they recognize that. So if you have issues and you have elders, go to the elders, but try to remember the things that we're talking about in the class. It goes back to balance. And if that's done, great. If it's not done, it's not going to be a good situation for anybody involved.
I bit off way more than I could chew. I thought, you know, I'm going to be able to do all of this and I'm going to be able to help him out so he doesn't have to work so hard when he comes home from work. But that didn't work out at all. The next year I realized, hey, I need to stop doing this. This year even more. And you're like, hey, I got to, you know, does that kind of fall into the delegating?
It does.
Take on too much.
Yes, and we can, I think, look at that from the standpoint in the Bible, the church is compared to a family. Let's make a couple quick points. In the family, anybody have the perfect wife for husband? Okay, yeah, Sherman's over there swatting you down. So nobody does. But even though, well, let me preface that before with this. If you are, you know, really happy with your spouse, could you still, if you decided to go and make a list, nitpick your spouse to death? Absolutely. You know, he doesn't shut the dresser door. There we go. The perfection room. We just fixed you up. Brought you back down to earth. Okay.
I'm going to withdraw my...
Yeah. Okay. But we'll take that. Okay, so you're married to an imperfect spouse, but still you are happy in that relationship. Well, how can those two things, those items would seem to be contradictory, so how can those two things go together?
If you understand your own imperfections.
All right. Again, we recognize that we stumble in many ways. So that's one point. What else?
If you think about all the imperfections, you're in trouble. You got to look at the positive. You know, the Bible tells us to look at things that are good, pure, those kinds of things.
Okay. That's another great point. What else? What might we say?
You can't be selfish.
Okay, that's going to be another important part, because if you're looking for that perfect spouse, you're not willing to be him or her. Well, everybody has flaws, but now for you, you know, you just need to, you know, stand up and fly right. But selfishness would come down to that. Anybody see, we talked about this a little while. I guess the first show is tonight. Submissive wives. Anybody? You know, Jeff has heard about it, but anybody hear about this show? Well, you probably will. This is, again, I don't know that we're going to watch it, or I may get more information about it, but apparently the wife greets a husband when the husband comes home, and, hey, honey, I know you've had a hard day, and let me cater to all your needs, hand and foot. I'm just going to wait and do whatever will please you. So here I am, and I'm going to be your loving maidservant. I imagine a lot of men may watch the show. I'm not sure. It's going to be popular with a lot of wives. But that made the national news the other day. It's been talked about in some workplaces. But that is kind of the selfish attitude. You know, it's going to be the wife who's going to slave to the husband hand and foot, you know, whatever his desires are, and that's going to create a happy home. Well, probably not for long. The wife's going to become bitter and resentful and some other things. But it does come down to selfishness, and if you have that in the marriage, it's not going to work. Lisa? Right.
But, I mean, for good and for bad, it just happens. If you don't have love, nothing will ever work.
Right. Okay, so we understand that with marriage. Let's take that and transfer that over to the church. Doesn't it work the same way in the church? Shouldn't it work the same way in the church? It should. But when it comes to the church, you have people who look at that from the standpoint of selfishness. If it's not exactly my way, then they're going to pay for it, right? And the other items that we talked about. So you have there, I don't know if you want to use the word imperfections, but you have there some things that might not go exactly as you want. But still, that doesn't mean that you leave the relationship, does it? Now, there can be some things introduced into a marriage. For example, if you've got a mate that's sexually unfaithful, that's going to be an issue. And in the church, you can have people head off into false doctrine. That's also an issue. But when we think about this, you want to go ahead and apply those principles that we discussed. A couple of the things that I quickly want to mention under anxiety. Anxiety, if you have it, go to the doc. The doc might say, things are different than your last visit. What's going on in your life? That ever happened to anybody? You've got high blood pressure, or there's some other things here that are indicating that there is a medical problem. Is there, you know, are you depressed? Have you suffered a loss? Are you doing some things differently? Are you starting to drink? Are you doing drugs? Or might ask a number of different questions to see what's going on. This is also something to bear in mind when we have elders. Who's ever seen an elder at the age of 25? I don't think any of us have. I mean, that's just, I don't know exactly.
Walk around the neighborhood.
Well, yeah. I saw some of them. I wasn't thinking about the fellows who wear black and white. I was thinking about an elder in the sense of how the New Testament uses that word. So, okay, let's be very precise on that. You're just picking. So, anyway. We just don't have that. You know, he's just not reached the point where he can fulfill those qualifications. You know, I don't know exactly what the youngest elder is. I would think at least 40. There may have been some elders somewhere at some point in the past, maybe in some foreign countries where they don't live as long as we do. You might have some elders maybe in the 30s. But in the U.S., I mean, there's no Bible age, but you're probably going to be at least in the mid to late 30s. I don't think I've seen anybody less than about 40 that served as an elder. But even that is a little on the young side. Elders, you know, maybe in their 50s, you have some in the 60s, some in the 70s, 80s. I don't think I've ever seen an elder over 100. But there are some guys who will still be serving when they're up there in the 90s. Well, health varies. But once you start hitting 65, 70, maybe even a little younger, what happens to the health? Generally.
It starts to deteriorate.
I mean, we're not evolving. We're kind of de-evolving when it comes to health as the years go by. You pick up some more problems. There may be high blood pressure. There may be some mobility issues, some other items. And you have that in conjunction with the things that we're talking about under this heading. Anxiety for all the churches, temptation, you know, the pressure. As you start adding those things in, are they favorable or unfavorable to the health? They're unfavorable. And there have been some people who have actually resigned, though they wanted to continue to serve as an elder, they've resigned because they said for health reasons. You know, the stress is bad, or the doctor has said, I need to eliminate stress, it could bring back the cancer, or it could do something else to me that, you know, I'm just not able to handle body-wise. Well, I think that may be why over in the book of Hebrews chapter 13, the Hebrew writer said, you deal with elders in a way which doesn't cause them grief. Well, that makes sense. If you've got somebody who's reached a point where the health is not all that great, don't pile it on. You know, is it really that big of a deal to create a big stir about the flower pot? You know, that it doesn't have any flowers or the flowers are dead. Based on other classes, what would you do rather than complain about the dead flowers?
Do something about it.
Do something about it. Well, what a wonderful idea. You know, you kind of self-delegate. Now, I don't know that I would just go up there and start swapping off the furniture. You might ask the elders, is that something I could do? You know, if you prefer a certain color or a certain type, but I'm willing to step forward and take care of that responsibility. You got some weeds out in the flower bed, Elder Joe. Well, okay. And I think the first thing that might go through an elder's mind is, hey, brother, hey, sister, why not you? You know, you could have pulled at least a dozen weeds by the time we finished up this conversation. So, again, it's back to that kind of thing. So we can take some anxiety off elders. And that finishes up point E. Elders are often not younger men, so undue stress can really be a hardship for them. Not only that, but it's the golden rule. Can't we apply that to a situation which is a non-elder situation? You go to somebody and say, well, I don't like that. Couldn't you fix it? Very likely. So why don't you do that? So common sense is what we're really dealing with here. Anybody else? Before we move on to our next heading. Okay. Well, I'm thinking in the 40 and 50 category, in contrast to 70, 80, and 90. So I use that word younger, I guess. I could put that in quotes. But like I say, you find a lot of people, in part that may be because of work. You have in our culture a lot of people working at the age of 65, and they say, I want to help, but I'm going to retire. And then maybe that's going to be one of the ways that I can serve. But or if you've got someone working two jobs, it's going to be very difficult to serve as an elder. So that's why I worded it that way. But yeah, when you look at it the other way, you could make that point. Okay, let's deal with our next item. This is going to be point six. You have here something a little different than what we've discussed thus far. Being unwilling to forge ahead with a plan. Oh, I don't think I worded that very well. So let me word it this way. You can have someone who's made a decision. And as that decision is progressing, they look at it and think, this may not have been the best choice, but I'm going to do it anyway. Now, people sometimes do that individually because of stubbornness. Why might an organization, or in this case a congregation, do that? We've made this choice, so we're going to do it anyway. Okay. There are some people, well, that goes back to what we talked about before in this lesson, right? Remember 1 Timothy 3, the devil, from what we can tell, has a problem with that P word. That's what? Pride. Do you think it can be possible for a person, including an elder, because of pride to say, I'm not going to go back and reverse course? We were going to try this program, and or maybe this is my idea, we're trying this, it's not working very well, and we're not going to stop. Now, he doesn't say it's because of pride, but that's what it boils down to. Absolutely. What else? People sometimes won't back up from a bad plan. Pride?
Have you got a lot of money invested in okay. Particular direction?
Yeah. And that has happened in a lot of congregations. You know, suppose that you buy a plot of ground and you think we need to build, but there's a split or maybe there is a development that relates to the city. They're going to reroute traffic or something. And you say, okay, now we've got this ground and we've hired a contractor and we've invested the money to get an architect and draft the plans, all those kinds of things. And, you know, we've already spent $60,000. Well, that is a lot of money. But if you continue with a $500,000 building project, you've taken a problem and now done what with it? Significantly. So you may want to just say, okay, we're going to see if we can sell the ground, and we might lose 10 grand. But better probably to do that than build $500,000 building and you've got traffic on the other side of town, or you've gone from a congregation of 500 down to 150, and it's just not practical. But people, again, pride and stubbornness have sometimes caused some people to say, we're not going to back up. Why else?
I think another reason is they may feel along with pride, but they feel that the congregation may think that they're not very stern or authoritative to back off from some decision they made.
You're wishy-washy.
Yeah, you're wishy-washy.
Yeah. So there you have the problem of fearing men. And that can be a problem. That could extend to some other areas as well, but what are people going to think? Well, do you think we need to give some consideration to how a person might view something? Does that merit any consideration at all?
Sure.
But at the same time, as you're giving consideration to that, that shouldn't drive... I mean, it's not like a political operation where you just send up a test balloon and, well, what are people going to think, and that's going to guide my behavior. But you factor that in, but if that's the driving force, you're not going to be an effective elder. What about another person, and this could also cover several different items, but another person who says, well, okay, my family or my good friend really wants that building built out there. There again, you have pressure being exerted from a different source, and maybe it's a great deal of pressure, or maybe it's a wife. She says, I really want that building. I had my heart set in that piece of property, and I'm going to be really unhappy if the building project doesn't go forward. Do you think that could be a problem for the guy? Yeah, and that's going to be one of the difficulties that he faces potentially. So when we think about the idea of forging ahead, and it may be a small plan, it may be a big plan, but there are some who just will not back up. Point A, some individual elders will not change their course or apologize. There can be various reasons for that. I think we've given several good ones. There may be a few others, but... you know, if you know that something is not going to work or it looks bad, common sense says you do what? Stop, reverse course, or at least think about it for a little while. Look at some other options. So if you have someone who's serving in that way, that is going to be an issue. We've kind of covered point B. C comes from the book of Daniel, chapter 6, verse 8. We'd also like for this passage to be read. And this is not the only time we see this in the book of Daniel, but I think the one passage is sufficient. Daniel chapter 6. Somebody close to that? Okay, Brian, read verse 8 if you would.
Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not.
Okay, the Medes and the Persians had a law. And that law was about the laws that they passed. If we pass a law, what are we going to do with it? We're going to keep it. We're not going to go back, and even if it's a bad law, even if it's a law which might be very difficult, we are going to follow this law. If an eldership, and I think the book of Daniel can be used in that regard, if an eldership makes that kind of choice and says, we're simply not going to back up, even though we've got good evidence, even though it's clear now that this is a bad plan, you're going to have even bigger issues probably as things continue to progress. Steve?
I don't want to get off the topic, but I thought there are some laws on the books that come up once in a while that was put in there 100 years ago that has no bearing on now.
Right.
They keep, it's almost laughable, some of the things, you know, you can't even come up with an example, but they didn't change, but the law's still there. And I suppose if you didn't do the right thing, you could get a ticket or be fined or whatever for something that's out. But they could have said, we're taking this law off the books, and they haven't done it. Mm-hmm. It's just too much trouble, or it's or it doesn't come up there often enough to do it.
Yep.
I don't know if that relates.
Well, it does. And you can take that and apply it in a congregational setting. Somebody says to the elders, well, let's do a different process with communion or something else, and we're not adding orange juice or peanut butter to the crackers or anything like that. But this is the way we do it. This is the way we've been doing it for the last 52 years. Well, maybe there's a better way to do it. Oh, no, we can't do that because this is the way we do it. There are some traditions, some laws, to use that word in the context that you did, that have been in place, and they just keep them because, well, that's the law that we have. Well, that doesn't always make good sense. But elders are sometimes put in that very spot. And there have been some who have said, we're not going to back up. I mean, this is just the way we do it here. Well, that's not because it's Bible. It's just because it was tradition, and it's been around there for a long time. Okay, point seven. We've got a couple minutes left, and we want to finish this out today. Trying to solve spiritual problems with secular tools and ideas. Are all secular ideas bad when we think about the church?
No.
I mean, we're talking about security. The world has been dealing with security for thousands of years, so we can probably learn some things security-wise from them. And there are all kinds of things that we can pick up from the world. However, the church is not a business. What would one of the fundamental distinctions be between the church and business? If I'm the employer and Steve's my employee, can I fire him? Absolutely. But do I have the right to say, okay, I'm not going to count Steve as a Christian anymore. I'm going to cast him out of the church. No, that's God's authority. That's God's business. How else would we distinguish between the church and the authority, or the church and the secular world?
The church don't have a president.
Okay. Leadership structure is. Yeah, leadership structure is going to vary. And we also, when we think about the difference between the two, if Steve is my employee, what am I giving him in return for his work?
Pay.
All right. In the church, what are people getting? Hey, you come, and what am I going to do? Get a $100 bill every time I see you. Well, it doesn't work that way, does it? I mean, we're dealing with, in the church, volunteers. It is a completely different arrangement. So you have to bear those kinds of things in mind. We've mentioned this before, but sometimes the idea is, well, he's built a business, he's good in business, he's familiar with the business world, he must be a good elder, potentially. Well, that doesn't necessarily turn out to be true. And people have said, well, you know, he's never had any kind of managerial experience, he's surely not going to be a good elder. That's also not always true. So need to be careful with that kind of thing. Discuss some of the key differences between businesses and local congregations. We've done that. To start this discussion, talk about the definition of success. And I think we touched on that just a little enough. Failing to be impartial. Galatians 3:28. Let's also mention that quickly. Remember, Paul says, in Christ there's neither who? Jew nor Greek. There's neither bond nor free. There's neither male nor female. You're all one in Christ Jesus. Now, we do have different functions, different tasks, but we do need to recognize the unity there. James talked about in James chapter 2, verses 1 through 9, there's the rich fellow who comes in, and what's said to him? Hey, come on up. We've got a nice seat just for you. Poor guy shows in, and what's said to him? You know, you stay out in the back 40. And James didn't speak favorably about that. Do you think it's possible for elders to be impartial? Do you think it's possible for elders to be impartial? Not show favoritism. Yes. And that's the right thing to do. Do you think that elders sometimes fail to be impartial? Yes. Is it okay for elders to have some friends who are closer than other members of the congregation? Yes. Is that sometimes looked upon as being partial to others? Yes. So again, be careful in how we try to assess those things. Elders also have some responsibilities.